I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven. Do you understand? Finally,
all will obey Santa in this new world order. Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
That sounds like a lot of...
There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immense multinational dominion of governments. Multinational dominion
which will produce and control hallucinations to the point that it will change human reality.
PSYOP Radio.
Decoding the psychological warfare machinations within paranormal and parapolitical landscapes. PSYOP Radio.
Alrighty, folks, welcome aboard to a very special edition.
This is the unauthorized version of PSYOP Radio.
Commercial free,
yes.
For your listening pleasure. due to reasons beyond our control.
Yes.
We're going to proceed with a non-live recording of today.
Non-live and non-linear.
Not definitely. And this is recording this Saturday. Ooh, no, wait. Of course not Saturday. We've never done Saturday.
It's Sunday.
Sunday, June 7th.
Mm-hmm.
2009.
It's hot out there.
Oh, wait, it's not June 7th. Man, I'm slipping through time. It's June 14th. It's 2 days after my birthday, everybody.
Hey, yeah. Happy birthday.
Yay! Happy birthday to me.
We're coming up on the summer solstice here in about a week.
Very soon, on the 21st, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The next Sunday show, which is also Father's Day, so... or wait, is that the 19th? I forget. But that's Emancipation Proclamation Day.
Hmm.
Well, that was our new intro, folks. We hope you dig it. It'll be going live for the first time next week, hopefully.
We hope,
regularly scheduled American Freedom Radio time slot, Sunday evenings. As always, we have a ton of news. We got a lot of video clips tonight. Of course, they're audio clips for you folks out there, but there are links at our website, of course.
But if you can, you can use your imagination, and you can see the grandma be tasered.
Oh man, you can hear her moaning.
It's horrible. You know, when we talked about that show last week, when we talked, what am I saying? I'm going to restate that. When we talked about that topic on the last show, we hadn't seen the video yet.
Yeah.
And it hadn't been released. And just on the face of it, it sounded stupid, you know, that there could be any reason to taser a 72-year-old grandmother. Well, the news report described her as, well, they interviewed her, and she said, I was not combative, I was not argumentative. Well, when they released the video, it's very clear that she is argumentative, she is combative. Now, that get that out of the way first.
Right, yes.
Okay, for whatever reason...
She was having a bad day.
We don't know why she said that she was not argumentative when she... Yeah, evidently, I don't know why she got so upset over a simple... speeding ticket, but doesn't matter.
I think it was partly the demeanor of the guy, and that's kind of...
Well, you know, we don't see that part of the video, how he approached her to begin with. Now, but the point is, there's no reason to taser this woman, and this is the shoddiest display of police work I've seen in a while. I mean, and another thing that should be clarified here is that early stories were confused about whether or not this was the Travis County Sheriff's Department or the Constable's Department that was responsible. And, well, it turns out that it was the Constable, the Travis County Constable, which is a separate thing. And I don't know much about them, but it's a separate entity from the Travis County Sheriff's Department. And the sheriff, when he saw this video, was quick to distance himself and his department from the constable's office. He said, it's not us. And he said when he saw the video that he was in awe of what he was seeing, that the police behavior was so bad, it was awe-inspiring, really. And, you know, but it's understood that there are some bad cops out there, and they're not all bad. But this situation is so outrageous. You know, for one thing, it's still being defended by the department.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's nothing defensible here at all. And this guy, this cop, Chris Beasy, who tasered this woman, is the taser instructor for the constable's office.
I think I have the audio of this piece here. Nope, that is not it. that's the title for the show. I thought I had that, but every video I've tried to download of that has not worked for me yet. But we do have the sheriff stunned video. But he doesn't say enough beyond that. And the whole awe thing, to me, it strikes me as like it could be taken two ways, and they're both kind of scary.
Yeah. I don't know. But you see, his being the taser instructor is problematic. Oh, we have it here. Okay.
The Travis County Sheriff says he's in awe of this video showing a deputy constable shocking a 72-year-old woman with a taser last month.
Sheriff Greg Hamilton issued a statement today making clear the deputy did not work for his office. Shannon Wilson joins us live with continuing coverage of this story.
That
Shannon, good evening. While Sheriff Hamilton says he does not agree with the actions of the deputy constable,
Precinct 3
Constable Richard McCain is defending his officer's use of force. May 11th, Deputy Constable Chris Bays pulls over 72-year-old Catherine Winkfine for speeding in a construction zone along this notoriously dangerous stretch of Highway 71. Winkfine first refused to sign the speeding ticket and was ordered out of her car to be placed under arrest. Then, this.
Give me the thing, I'll sign it.
Go, Granny.
After struggling to get
Winkfine, which is not a good thing to say to a cop.
Step back or be shocked with the taser.
I'm getting back in my car.
He just wanted to get her controlled without hurting her or getting her, because she was afraid she was going to jump back into traffic.
Precinct 3
right.
Constable Richard McCain says his officer followed their use of force policy, repeatedly giving verbal warnings before deploying his taser.
Okay, it's a bad situation all the way around. You know, nobody wants to sit there and put hands on. Nobody wants to hurt a 72-year-old woman, period.
An initial investigation by McCain's office found no wrongdoing by the officer.
Is it over? No. It's continued investigation.
Constable McCain says he's puzzled by Sheriff Greg Hamilton's statement.
A 72-year-old woman gets tased and it's caught on tape.
And I'm sorry, folks, to subject you to this, but I mean,
well, Terry, the Travis
nobody
County
should
Constable's
be subjected
office,
to this.
Precinct 3 released the dash cam video of the traffic stop on Highway 71. Now you can decide whether the deputy went too far in getting the 72-year-old woman to comply or whether her actions along a dangerous stretch of highway
warranted her
being tasered.
Because it's the comments at the end of this piece that really speak.
On the afternoon of May.
If I can find them, it's...
He chose all...
Here we go.
After repeated warnings, BC does use his taser.
She was an adult. She was told 9 times to comply. She chose all 9 times to disregard the orders of a Texas peace officer.
After being tased, Wink finds tone with the deputy softens.
You understand, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
That's what it's about.
We attempted to get Wink Fine side of the story.
And showing his boss giving orders, and you put these weapons in the hands of any bully.
Showed her the pink marks.
This guy.
One of the
this
two
guy,
spots
you,
where
you,
she was
your
struck.
Second update on this.
Still, despite Wing Fine's age,
your article
Sergeant
against
Major Gary
this,
Griffin with the Precinct 3 Constable's
behavior.
Office says his deputy made the right decision
this is the part
when
that
met with physical resistance.
If I hit that woman with this, I'm going to break something. I'm going to break something. He didn't break nothing.
He didn't break nothing. If that isn't the most ignorant, backwoods, inbred, mutant, redneck bunch of hillbilly, rock-headed stupidity, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I, you can...
He didn't break nothing.
It's like he's threatening you. He's threatening you,
yeah.
Me and everybody.
So that's the big defense here. Now, and this guy, Chris Beasy, is the taser instructor.
So he knew.
And he would presumably know that Taser, the company, does not recommend tasering elderly people.
They could break something.
They could break something. You know, it's just real stupid. And that they continue to defend this. And you have to wonder, what exactly does the constable's office do besides going around beating up old ladies?
Probably coordinating with SWAT teams to do drug busts on presumed pot dealers or meth labs. That's a little,
well, I would
a
just
lot of
like
counties
to,
are doing.
Yeah, I would just like to suggest that if they want us to be safe, if they're really serious about keeping us safe, let's get rid of the constables department.
Well, do you remember?
I would feel a lot safer if we didn't have any Travis County constables.
Do you remember hearing about this a few years ago for the first time? The syndrome of sudden in death or sudden in custody death.
Yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald died of that strange syndrome, didn't he?
A lot of people do. But seriously, I remember hearing about this, and it came to my mind recently with all this stuff. And sure enough, it's from a book called Taser. Conducted Electrical Weapons, Physiology, Pathology, and Law, and it's a section called Sudden in Custody Death, and it's a section by Samuel J. Stratton, who's a professor at University of California, Los Angeles School of Public Health, and the David Geffen School of Medicine at the University of California, and Medical Director, Health Disaster Management, Emergency Medical Services, Orange County Health Care Agency Disaster. And one of the quotes from the abstract says, sudden in custody death does not have a formal medical definition, but the general term sudden death is used medically to describe the rapid, unexpected death of an individual within 24 hours of the onset of symptoms, getting arrested. It follows then that sudden in custody death refers to rapid, unexpected death during detention of individuals by law enforcement or public safety personnel. This term comprises the vast majority of arrest-related deaths, the preferred term in criminology literature, which include the fairly rare fatal police shootings. Fairly rare, eh? So, in following a link to another article that we'll get to in a little while, I found a news link to comonews.com, suspected drunk driver shot to death by police.
Wow, they're really getting strict out there
they
now
are.
With regard
and
to DWI.
You know, and I at first I was like, the first thing that popped in my mind was, well, maybe this is a good situation where I can review the case, maybe it's where somebody should have used a taser.
Yeah.
I was wrong, perhaps.
All that seems to be happening is they're still shooting people, but they're also using tasers.
Yeah.
You know?
let's see if I have this. Which article is that? two articles from Como.
Como 4 News starts right now.
Serious questions this hour in an officer-involved shooting in Everett. A suspected drunk driver is dead. Good morning, I'm Connie Thompson.
And I'm Mike Dardis. Police were reportedly trying to stop a drunk man from driving his car after leaving a bar in Everett. Como 4's Mark Miller's been on the scene all morning long, live with new information. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mike. I do have new information. I'm standing in the spot where the driver was in his vehicle. It was a white Corvette. Investigators, they've just opened up this scene after spending all morning, 8 or 10 hours, gathering evidence.
Cleaning
now,
up
it's
evidence.
Hard to see behind me, but the car was here. There is a damaged fence that starts giving us some idea of why police may have shot. But from what police are telling us, this was a case where a man simply refused to listen to the cops.
Behind the police lines, a man lay dead, shot in his car in the parking lot behind Chuck Wagon Inn Restaurant and Lounge. Plenty of people witnessed the shooting, a traumatic experience.
Stunned, really stunned, you know.
Customers tell me the man was drunk and just before midnight said he was heading out to his car. Several people were concerned enough to call 911. When Everett police arrived, the man was already behind the wheel.
They told him to get out of the car and stuff, and he wouldn't do it, and he started up his car and revved up the engine. They told him to shut it off, and he didn't do it.
A moment later, the car lurched forward and plowed into a cyclone fence. It knocked a woman to the ground. Witnesses say that's when police opened fire, killing the driver.
Because I don't even know who it was, and, you know, it's just... Just shook us all up.
Chuck Wagon employees don't understand how a relatively minor situation could so quickly turn deadly.
Yes, you know, we don't have confrontations and stuff that goes on in the bar. We have a real mellow place to work and have a family-type business here.
Now, a couple of things I need to make sure you understand. One, the car did not hit that woman who fell to the ground. The fence knocked her down when the car rammed into that cyclone fence. I've also just learned that police, as they were trying to talk this guy out of the car, officers say they tased the man once while he was behind the wheel. So we'll continue to get new information for you. There is no identification yet on the dead man. The police officer, 11-year veteran of the Everett Police Force, 41 years old, he's going to be on administrative leave. So we'll have more tonight on Como 4 News at 4, 5, and 6.
All right, Mark, thank you. It'll take some time for that task force to get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
Well, once the car lurched forward and knocked over the fence, which knocked over the woman, what was the point of shooting him?
To keep him from harming someone, I guess. Somehow killing him would make him not able to do anything with the vehicle and hurt her or anybody else. In the video, the vehicle was clearly hemmed in on both sides,
uh-huh.
if those cars that are there now were there then, and he only had one way to go, backwards. So why didn't the cop just shoot out the tires?
That's usually what's done. You know,
shoot the vehicle. The guy at that point might actually snap out of it and say, you know, this guy's shooting his firearm. I think I'll stop and surrender.
So he was in a place where he might have backed up.
Or somehow driven over that fence. I doubt it.
Yeah.
From a standstill. You know, even in a Corvette, you know, 0 to 60 in 3 inches. What? But my point for me is, at first I thought this might be an example of where a taser might have been a good idea. And now I think it may have contributed to the situation. That may have been what caused him to lose control
of
the vehicle.
Well, you know, that makes sense. Forward. You know, because once you tase somebody, you know, that cop, Chris Beasy, who tasered the... 72-year-old grandma.
My grandma.
Even after she's lying on the ground, he's standing there barking orders, or he's going to tase her again. Now, what kind of police work is that?
Modern.
That's not even a decent
current
human behavior.
Yeah, no, it's
that you know, and when tasers were first put in the hands of the cops, the whole idea was that it was supposed to cut down on the incidents of people being shot by cops. Cops, are, as far as I can tell, are still shooting people dead with guns just as much as they were when they shot that kid the other day over in East Austin. You know, a lot of controversy about that. They keep killing black people. The cops do here in Austin. And in this case, some cop killed this kid. And wouldn't you know it, the video dash cam was turned off. Yeah.
Convenient.
But they're still killing people with guns. And what are they using tasers for compliance situations? And you hear this, that mutant inbred character,
yeah.
Griffin, who's the spokesman, the one that said he didn't break nothing, you know. You hear him talking about how she had nine times.
She's an adult.
Well, you know, a lot of people are adults. The situation here is that people aren't the same, and situations aren't the same.
Right.
And this attitude of treat every situation the same, every individual
finesse
that you...
Finesse and skill are probably,
you know,
no longer a part of taser training or any training,
yeah,
at all.
Which is how this happens. This is the first time it's happened in Austin, but it's happened across the country. Elderly people being tased. People in wheelchairs. People who have some kind of infirmity, which makes it seem like they're drunk or something. It turns out they were having an epileptic fit and they get tased. Or things like that happen all the time, and unnecessarily. And you have to wonder, what were cops doing with little old ladies at traffic stops who were giving them hell in the past? You know, it's not the first time this has happened.
Right, little old ladies have been giving cops,
what did they
hell
do?
For a long time.
Resort to deadly force?
No, they broke something with a baton, I bet.
Yeah, they took out the nightstick, and, you know, cops...
Probably not.
...didn't do that. You know, and I don't think most cops do it now, you know, and I think that's reflected in the Travis County Sheriff's comment but the problem is these incidents, there's too many of them. And it is, like we were talking about
epidemic.
Last week, it's become epidemic.
It's an epidemic.
And as that happens, you know, people are getting outraged. I'm really hot about this. I was so mad about this earlier in the week. I did two blog posts about it in a row. You know, police brutality is getting worse and worse and worse. And cops, you know, escalate the situations, you know, their attitude. The minute you have contact with them, it's aggressive. And, you know, that's asking for trouble on their part. And furthermore, these incidents of police brutality are, you know, going to be a big problem for them. I'll tell you what, we do not ever advocate any form of violence here on this show.
Self-defense,
certainly. But there are people out there, unstable individuals,
yes,
hearing about these situations and reading about them, and they're getting really mad. Or maybe they've been involved in a situation or had somebody close to them who was harmed or you know, abused and wronged in some way by a cop. And so we have this story that appeared over the past week. An individual was posting some kind of threats on the InfoWars website.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a news story. I don't know which one. I forget. But it was about police brutality. And this guy was saying, I've got this officer's home address, and I'm going to, you know, retaliate. Whoa. Don't do that, folks. If you're listening to this show, do not do that. You know, if there's anybody out there listening to this who is that angry and that unstable, please don't do it.
Seek therapy.
Yeah, don't do that, because that does not help the situation.
Okay, so yeah, that was from Roanoke.com. Roanoke man charged with making online threats. This is a really interesting article because
mm-hmm.
there's a whole bunch of links. Well, actually, there's a whole bunch of one link. There's five links to InfoWars.com in this article, and it's all top level domain links. It's not to individual articles, but Roanoke man charged with making online threats by Lawrence Hammock. A Roanoke man faces charges of making online threats against two police officers, one in Oakland, California, and one in Martinsville, after reading newspaper accounts of incidents in which they used deadly force. Jeffrey L. Weaver, 47, made the threatening comments in January on a news website called InfoWars.com, according to a complaint filed earlier this week in U.S. District Court in Roanoke. Weaver, who was ordered held without bond Friday, logged onto the site using the name F the pigs, the complaint states. After reading a newspaper article on Infowars.com that described how a 17-year-old boy died after being shocked with a taser by a Martinsville police officer in January, Weaver wrote, "This makes my blood boil." Quote, "Maybe I should drive to Martinsville with my 9mm Glock and some Teflon-coated armor-piercing black Rhino hollow point rounds and do the world a favor by ridding the world of this piece of beep pig," the message read. Authorities traced the post to Weaver's internet protocol address, which they say was used several days earlier to make even more menacing comments about the fatal shooting of an unarmed man by police officers on a train platform in Oakland. So, okay. And as I'm not kidding, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 every time Infowars.com is mentioned, it's mentioned at least 5 times, it's linked to. And it ends the article by saying, Infowars.com is based in Austin, Texas. It is affiliated with Alex Jones, a radio and internet talk show host who calls himself, quote, aggressive constitutionalist, unquote, who defends the Bill of Rights and the nation's borders while avoiding, quote, the bogus political label of left and right. So, it's been alleged by, of course, Alex and others, it's been pretty obvious that there's been repeated campaigns against different online activists and conspiracy personalities, to use that phrase. But it'll be interesting to see if that charge sticks against this person. Were they a provocateur being paid, or is it? I mean, did somehow they get cajoled into it so that it would be a way of tarnishing the movement with yet another radical at this time when radicals are being
and such things happen.
So I don't know.
But I can see too how it could be possible an individual could get so angry, and there's a false sense of anonymity on the internet, and could make threats, and that's not good. But this is cause for concern. What worries me is that if the law enforcement in this country doesn't get a grip, that they're going to make a lot of enemies out here, and people are already angry about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And who knows?
We need to be able to trust our our police.
And who knows what that old woman that was stopped, by that Officer Chris Beasy the other day, why she was so angry. Maybe she was angry at about something else before, she was stopped. And maybe it was angry about the political situation, I mean, people are already steamed up. Anybody that's awake would be very concerned about where we're going. And then you're pulled over and a cop, speaks to you rudely or whatever. And they're immediately so aggressive. I mean, they just come down so hard. It's like everybody's in boot camp suddenly, and we all have to know,
Your papers, please.
Sorry, but when I was growing up, I wasn't taught how to follow orders, I would.
Well, son, then you didn't get a proper education.
I didn't serve in the military.
Unfortunately, your teachers didn't break nothing.
No, they didn't break nothing either.
They didn't break your will.
And they might have broken a paddle on my backside. I'll tell you, I was too tough for them. But, most of us haven't been in boot camp. And anyway, this is a civilian society. Okay? And
moment.
Suddenly we're expected to...
I don't think that's going to last much longer, man. That's really what it's all about.
It does appear that there is a conditioning here to get people, all kinds of people, even 72-year-old grannies used to obeying orders, and the cop tells you to get down and do push-ups, man, well, you better do it.
Yeah, or you'll hear her, you'll be the next one saying, yes, sir.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what was really disgusting were some of the comments... a lot of the comments on the American Statesman's website, comments of readers of this story.
She should have complied.
It's appalling how many people will say things like, "Well, the old broad had it coming. She wasn't complying with the officer's order, or she was
over a traffic ticket.
Yeah,
folks.
You know,
over a freaking traffic ticket,
and all trying to justify it. You see, and you can't justify it. And what is wrong with the minds of people that they can see something like that, and they don't see what's happening? That this is brutality. This is there's nothing right about this, and yet there are so many people out there who have been so conditioned. And I guess, you know, it's that psychological effect where people who are afraid of something will try to, you know, cozy up to it. You know, psychologically it helps them to adapt, you know, to think, well, the police state really is good, and to try to rationalize it, you see, in their minds, so that they don't have to deal with the fact that the police state is rotten to the core, and that there are some really dangerous individuals out there in uniform right now.
Yeah, you know, and there's been all this talk. I want to go to a break, but before we go to the break, I want to mention there's, of course, all this talk right now about, you know, tightening belts and reducing budgets and cutting money to the city police department. And, of course, I'm like, man, yeah, cut all those special ops projects. Cut all the SWAT team projects, you know. But in talking to my mom about this, who worked briefly at the city police department as a civilian, and still had a friend there that just recently retired, I believe, and she said that it's her impression that every time there's any threats or actual real budget cuts at the police department, what they inevitably do is axe civilian jobs instead of actual cops. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening instead of the intended consequences is supposedly, according to this friend of a friend working on the inside, that, you know, they just cut the people who do like the data entry for all the reports, and so things back up and it just becomes more classic bureaucracy, just totally
and important criminal cases don't get solved, and what you're left with is a force full of cops with nothing to do but just go around and bother people.
I don't know.
You know, pull them over for one minor infraction.
If we could get them to stop militarizing law enforcement, I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
This track I first heard on Jack Blood's show, Deadline Live, and I really dug it. You'll recognize some of the rhythms and the nuances. It's somebody from, Frank Zappa Land, doing similar crazy scales and stuff. Check this out. We'll be right back.
Deciding whether you're Hitler. His name is Barry Satora. Operation BF. Welcome to the New World Order. Indeed, he ever was a United States citizen.
with regard to the question of religious affiliation. No baptismal certificate or evidence of a conversion to Christianity or to any other religion but Islam has ever been presented. So, who is this man who, even as a boy and a citizen of a largely Muslim nation of Indonesia, has always aspired to become president of the United States? Who is this man who calls himself Barack Hussein Obama?
The guy is a puppet of the worst circles of imperialism.
Who is this man?
He's somebody who's been raised literally up out of nothing by these trilateral people. Obama was recruited by big...
Alrighty. Welcome back to PSYOP Radio. Live! Not really. This is pre-recorded. We're recording it live! This is Sunday night, June 14th. And thank you for downloading the podcast. And thank you for tuning in live when you do. That song, I think it's called Obummer. And like I said, I first heard it on Jack Blood's show.
Oh, bummer.
I think it's somebody from the old Frank Zappa touring outfit.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally, you listen to it, it's got that same kind of like dancing, playful
tonalities.
And stuff.
And then there's how do you say that? Obama. Obama.
Obama.
Obama. Obama. Obama.
Yeah, or Barack Hinaten.
Yeah. Well, you know, we played that Obama song on the last show.
Barack Obama.
Someone wrote us this past week. I should read that now. An email from a listener. It says, I was listening to the latest PSYOP show. Always a great listen, by the way. Thank you. This is from Tom in Jersey, by the way.
Thanks, Tom.
You guys were having some fun with the Manana song. Just a little weird trivia here. This song first appeared in a shockumentary porn film called Sweden, Heaven or Hell, in the early 70s.
No.
The song is apparently used during a lesbian shower scene. I would never have thought that. And you were saying earlier you thought it originated with the Muppets. Well,
that's where I first saw it. That just goes to show where they get their...
Well, you know, that was where I first saw it, too, because I don't see that much lesbian porn.
You should check it out. There's some
But
out
he
there.
Goes on to say, I managed to find the original 45 at a flea market marked with from the film Sweden, Heaven or Hell. So there's a original 45 RPM record that came.
Wow.
And did a little searching after that. I've since found a copy of the film, but haven't watched yet. Well, thank you, Tom in Jersey, for that interesting bit of trivia. Yeah, here we go with the Muppet version.
Augmented. Meanwhile,
when the president goes sightseeing, sight you sick, pointing, 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 pyramids, pointing in a mosque, embarrassing booties, a fate the president and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton avoided by going shoeless. The president's voice carried at Cairo University, where he kept quoting the Quran for his Muslim audience.
The Holy Quran tells us, teaches that the whole all mankind.
The audience was kind.
Sorry,
to
folks.
President Obama.
Blaspheming.
Thank you.
Though he is no doubt jet-lagged, press secretary looked as if he was fighting off sleep during the speech. Spoke so much about his Muslim experiences that the website Wonkette jokingly called this his Ich bin ein Muslim speech. The president even rattled off a few phrases in Arabic.
Shukran. Saka. Assalamu alaikum. E pluribus unum.
Wait a minute. That last one wasn't Arabic. That was Latin. It's what's inscribed on a quarter.
Out of many, one.
Many wanted to be the one to get the best spot at the photo op with Presidents Obama and Mubarak. course, the visual highlight was... No, not him. It was the president touring the pyramids.
Yes.
Outside and in.
The pyramids.
Mummification.
Self-identification.
That looks like me. Look at those ears.
Separated at birth from a hieroglyphic, but the president's guide saw another resemblance.
They look like King Tut.
I've been told.
Yes, it's true.
He should know about King Tut. Dr. Sahi Hawass oversaw scans of Tut's mummy that produced this likeness. Though President Obama tends to skip the eye makeup, the president's trip inspired Egyptians to display decorations calling Obama the new King Tut of the world.
Whoa.
Even the new King Tut couldn't budge a pyramid. Still, it's good practice for trying to push peace in the Mideast. Ginny Mo, CNN. New York.
And there at the end of the video is the image I posted at the website. Yeah. That's got his face represented over King Tut. Now,
it's weird looking.
This all, I guess, happened last weekend, and I posted about it after the show. I did a little screenshot there of Barakanaten. Barakanaten. And this was interesting to me, not just because, okay, here the, my God, not just this crazy little lady, but a lot of other CNN and other news outlets are carrying, have been carrying these stories about Barack looking like a pharaoh. But what's interesting to me more is that our own Austin Freeman had been lecturing on this for quite some time before. And so I've got a link to anomalytelevision.com where you can watch. The ears were unmistakable where they compare one goofy picture of something with seemingly a face and big ears looking like a...
Obama.
Obama not. But more so is these. This you can see here.
Yeah. That's pictures. An odd thing to suddenly be seeing everywhere, pictures of Barack
Psyop
Obama made
or
up
not.
As Tut. Because, you know, you have to take a look at the possibility. Could this be some kind of a subliminal, magical, with a K, kind of a thing?
Trying to link him to, you know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But I'm sure that there are people out there who are already suspecting that that might be the case and perhaps writing about that. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So, man, so much other stuff to cover this evening. Well, Cindy Sheehan's been in town. She did a march to the Bush home in Dallas, calling for impeachment because of, well, you know, take your pick of reasons.
She's
torture.
Never going to leave that man alone.
No, I hope not.
No one should.
But, you know, I got to remember.
The chair will entertain up to 10 requests for 1 minute speeches on each side.
Not just Ron Paul that
what
speaks out and speaks
truth.
What
purpose does the gentleman from Ohio rise?
Occasionally, this other little short guy.
Ah, yes.
Without objection, the gentleman from Ohio is recognized for
American
1 minute.
People have a right to know or ask what's going on here. We have trillions of dollars for war, trillions of dollars for Wall Street, and trillions of dollars for health insurance companies. But now we hear we have less money for Social Security and less money for Medicare. Is there a connection? We must begin restoring our nation by restoring the peace, and we begin today when we defeat the supplemental appropriation that keeps us in Iraq and Afghanistan. Democrats were elected on a promise to end the war in Iraq. We're continuing it. Democrats were elected to get us out of Afghanistan. The war is escalating. And to top it all off, members of Congress, we have a rule, it's in the rule, which keeps Guantanamo open, keeps the prisoners there, despite the fact that many of them may have had their basic rights violated. It's time for America to come home. Start paying attention to creating jobs, health care, education, retirement security, investor security. It's time for us to start paying attention here, instead of running around the world trying to tell other people how to live.
Right on.
Gentlemen's time has expired. For what purpose does the gentleman from Texas rise?
Right on, man. And no, that's not the Ron Paul gentleman from Texas. It was a non-gentleman, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Yeah.
At least that was actually, I think, from late May, a couple weeks old. But, you know, I just want to throw that bone out there. Look, there are even some decent Democrats.
That's right.
There are.
And even the Democrats now, with his comments there, are pointing out that the emperor has no clothes, or should I say the pharaoh has no clothes. You know, we've been promised all this wonderful change. All these people, everybody I know that was supporting Obama was expecting the war to end and all these horrible things like torture to no longer be an issue.
And maybe even some justice for the perpetrators of so much of this bad policy and this atrocity.
And, we're not getting it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And Social Security continuing to dry up. You know, there's not going to be anything left here for a lot of people when it's time for them to be eligible for Social Security. And all this, and meanwhile, all these trillions of dollars have gone just to line the pockets of just outright criminals.
And the hometowns of these people might not even be left. The cities might not be left. This blew my mind. Telegraph.co.uk headline, U.S. cities may have to be bulldozed in order to survive. Dozens of U.S. cities may have entire neighborhoods bulldozed as part of a drastic shrink-to-survive proposal being considered by the Obama administration to tackle economic decline. Now, you've probably heard, you know, about whole tracts of new homes being bulldozed because of the mortgage crisis, and we've got tent cities.
There's also homeless people around.
Like we haven't had in decades, in a century, or, you know, maybe not that far long, but, I mean, we're getting there. It's been a long freaking time since we've had this level of human suffering and mass.
Here are some homes. Well, we have all these homeless people. Put them in these homes. And what are they doing? They're going to bulldoze them? That's Obama's big plan? Wow.
This is crazy. The government looking at expanding a pioneering scheme in Flint, one of the poorest U.S. cities, which involves raising entire districts and returning the land to nature. Local politicians believe the city must contract by as much as 40%. Concentrating the dwindling population and local services into a more viable area. You know, Alex Jones isn't the end-all and be-all of all this stuff, but, you know, I just flashed back to the end of The Road to Tyranny,
mm-hmm.
where he said, you know, they're going to herd, you know, it's like the futurists Mount Olympus where, mm-hmm. you know, the rich and powerful are honed to a few at the top, and that they plan on herding people into densely packed cities and exterminating them, and also returning huge parts of the earth back to nature. And, you know, it sounds great, you know, the back to nature part, you know.
Well, but yeah, on humans, the surface.
Humans mm-hmm. need to learn how to spread out across the surface in more thin
There's
layers.
Plenty of room
There's
out
plenty
there.
Plenty of room, folks. Yes, we need better ability to educate folks about, you know, limiting their reproduction. Some just, you know, are a little much, but, you know, at the same time, it's a basic human right. So,
well, this is really sinister.
This is crazy. The radical experiment is the brainchild of Dan Kildee. Get that. Dan Kildee, treasurer of Gene C. County, which includes Flint. Hey, that's kind of funny. Gene C. The name of a pseudonym that Greg Bishop used before. Dean Gene C., because he lives on. Oh, never mind. having outlined his strategy to Barack Obama during the election campaign, Mr. Kildee has now been approached by the U.S. government and a group of charities who want him to apply what he has learned to the rest of the country. Mr. Kildee said he will concentrate on 50 cities identified in a recent study by the Brookings Institute, an influential Washington think tank, as potentially needing to shrink substantially to cope with their declining fortunes. I would bet that this is linked to the United Nations Agenda 21 and sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And while, again, this sustainability sounds like such a great thing, you know, being green, it sounds like such a great thing. There's always machinations and agendas at work, folks. So
yeah, they wouldn't make it seem like a bad thing if you're going to do something like herd everybody into the cities and begin exterminating them, and you want to coax them in there. Well, you know, you would make it seem like it was beneficial, and it was all motivated by purely altruistic motives. And, you know, so they're packaging this thing to seem what it is not.
So what else are we going to talk about, man? We've got stuff on Twilight Language. We've got the future of the Internet. We've got some more... Police state crazy news and need to know in the national security state. And how can you tell real from real news from fictional news anymore, especially when they're basically telling you, oh, we're not going to tell you about that. If this important thing happens, we're not going to tell you. Or this shooting and its connection to the demonization of the right wing and militia groups and an Olbermann turncoating. That just, dude, that really gets to me. This whole Olbermann thing. You know, I've recognized that he's not the, again, you know, some fount of absolute wisdom, but he seemed like he was more or less doing the good fight, and then he, you know, turns about as bad as freaking Glenn Beck.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys just have these roles that they play, and
So Glenn Beck's been saying, you know, 9/11 truthers support this crazy anti-Semite as a hero. Meanwhile,
good evening from New York. For the second time in 11 days, the kind of right-wing, religious-based domestic terrorism about which the Department of Homeland Security warned and for which that department was vilified and accused of playing politics has resulted in the death of an American. Our fifth story on the countdown. This time, it occurred 1 mile from the White House. Before 1 o'clock this afternoon, Eastern Daylight Time, police saying that a man carrying a .22 caliber rifle entered the crowded U.S. Holocaust Memorial in Washington, one of the most popular museums in the country, and to quote the D.C. police chief, the second he stepped into the building, he began firing. The suspect was not merely a white supremacist and a Holocaust denier. He was a man who was part of this country's effort, he claimed anyway, to stop Hitler, a World War II vet, he claimed. Remarkably, police saying that only the gunman and one security guard were injured. That security guard, Stephen Tyrone Johns, dying a few hours later. It was because of Mr. Johns and his colleagues, police say, that the suspect never made it past the security checkpoint and that so few people were hurt. This kind of attack, precisely what the Department of Homeland Security had been warning about 2 months ago in an assessment that predicted a rise in right-wing extremism, including hate crime recruitment pegged to the presidential election. Quoting it, the historical election of an African-American president and the prospect of policy changes are proving to be a driving force for right-wing extremist recruitment and radicalization.
So are you.
Most statements by right-wing extremists have been rhetorical, expressing concerns about the election of the first African-American president, but stopping short of calling for violent action. Because of Republican outrage to that report, Homeland Security Secretary Napolitano apologized for it, even while continuing to defend its
outrage.
Contents. Thus tonight, even though if the crime had been the same legitimate and the suspect outrage. Had a Middle Eastern name, Washington might be in lockdown right now. Instead, one of the network newscasts was able to dismiss the event with the headline, Museum Mayhem. Investigators identifying the gunman as 88-year-old James Von Brunn from Eastern Maryland. On the internet, Von Brunn apparently identified himself as a Holocaust denier, as a white supremacist, as a conspiracy theorist who does not believe President Obama to be a natural-born citizen of the United States. On a right-wing conspiracy site, Von Brunn, in late November, apparently telling like-minded extremists that Holocaust memorials are enemy territory, quote, do or die, moving to Montana is a cop-out, the enemy is at the Fed, the networks, Wall Street, Congress, at, quote, Holocaust memorials, at synagogues, not in some Sylvan Mountain retreat. The next month, on another site, Von Brunn, having warned again of violence, quote, America is a third-world racial garbage dump, stupid, ignorant, dead, broke, and terminal. Prepare to die, white America. You deserve it. He ended with the quote, Heil Hitler.
And he was 88 years old, which is a number associated with
shooting has been good
Heil Hitler, H.H.
And he's got that German last name.
Do we know if he was acting alone?
There's
straight from central casting. You know, this just sounds too perfect.
There's some other crazy stuff, like apparently he changed one of his domain names at some point to something associated with Ron Paul, and I guess it's Glenn Beck or somebody is trying to say, see, he's a Ron Paul supporter or some crazy shit.
And you notice the use of the word conspiracy theorist. By itself, it's an epithet now. And then it was Beck, wasn't it, who made the leap that somehow Holocaust deniers are also 9/11 truthers.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, where does he get that?
Here to Washington, he was living then in New Hampshire, according to police at the time. He had some weapons, a sawed-off shotgun.
Of these 9/11 truthers. It is the information that we have. Mike, let me go to you. One of the guys, or one of the groups that I've been warning about for a very long time, are these 9/11 truthers. It is the information that we have at this point is this guy is a hero in the 9/11 truther community. Don't know if that's true or not. That is the early report.
No.
It didn't stop him from going ahead and saying it, did it?
I mean, it's totally fine to speak out against the Fed, but these are whacked-out conspiracy.
The
government has planned 9/11. The Jews were involved, et cetera, et cetera. And from what we have seen in early reports, this guy is being held up as somebody. They liked him because he'll actually do something.
No, please. No, no, no. Yeah. We don't respect people who, you know, murder people. That's why we don't respect you and the people you enable.
Yeah, and we don't respect those kind of propagandists like Glenn Beck and Keith Olbermann who seem to be playing a con game here where they, you know, they keep the public divided. Along phony lines of left versus right, and you know, put these divisive issues out there and hype them. And as far as this Holocaust memorial shooting, you know, just a matter of time before some kind of psyop, black op was staged there. It was just begging to happen. And, oh, Homeland Security knew it was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I found somebody.
Wonder why
somebody had taken their video camera and filmed their local news. And again, this is where I mentioned earlier, Como 4 News.
Thank you, Marley. Guns, drugs, and an anti-government mission. FBI special agents are investigating a Snohomish County gun range that court documents say is a militia training camp.
Militias? Are they illegal?
Got back from the gun range in Monroe, Casey.
Dan, the owner, tells me he runs a nonprofit group and he can't afford to do a background check on every visitor. He says now the county and the FBI are cracking down on him because one of those visitors was a convicted felon caught with guns and drugs. With thousands of shells littered across the ground, this gun range near Monroe is closed. Neighbors are glad to have the quiet, but they never suspected anything criminal was going on.
There's no threat, or I'm not worried about terrorism or any other radical type of thing.
The owner, Jim Fair, would not go on camera. He told me the county shut down the gun range because it violates commercial zoning laws. But Fair believes the county really clamped down because of this man, Andrew Gray, a convicted felon who now faces federal weapons and drug charges. In court papers, agents say Gray has a history with anti-government groups. An undercover informant told the FBI Gray has been firing rifles at the gun range, so agents searched his storage facility. They say they found 21 pistols and rifles, including a military-style machine gun. They also found 2 bulletproof vests and unregistered silencers. At Gray's house, they say they found more than 300 marijuana plants growing in the detached garage. Gray's attorney would not comment on the case. The gun range owner wouldn't tell me how long he's known Gray, but he knows the FBI is watching him. Court papers say anti-terrorism agents keep an eye on the gun range because the informant says it's known as a militia training center. Jim Fair told me the word militia is just an inside joke. He says his group is a local chapter of Project Appleseed, a nonprofit organization dedicated to teaching marksmanship and preserving gun rights. That sounds about right for neighbors who have known Jim Fair more than 40 years. You know, Mr. Perry, you've known him all your life.
Yes.
Nothing radical, nothing anti-government going on?
No, not at all. Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
Gray's attorney says her client stopped meeting with anti-government groups just a few months ago. Gray is free on bail. He's due in court on Thursday.
All right, total slander. I mean, it's obviously... This, I bet, is part of a wider campaign right now to demonize, again, the right-wing, quote-unquote, militia groups, anybody that's gun-oriented, anybody who, you know, yeah, they're probably going to be a little more conservative and backwoods than, mm-hmm. than you are as a liberal if you're listening. But, I mean, it's so obvious.
Yeah, it is obvious. We're going to hear more about militias.
And Olbermann... And, just turn, you know.
Well, you know, apparently he was never an honest individual to begin with. Just like a lot of them, he's just playing a role.
We've got the liberal Olbermann media, you know, outlet. We've got the Glenn Beck, you know, and you know, both of them have played to our base, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who are pro liberty, regardless.
They've still got a lot of them in their hands right now.
They're trying to, again, they're trying to make it a partisan, you know, liberal conservative fight.
They're becoming as bad as Fox News, and really there was never any difference to begin with. It's just a different way that they spin it. You know, this is the what they do now. All during Clinton's administration.
Right, exactly. During the liberal.
I was defined as some kind of a radical militia right-wing nut. Then Bush takes office, and I'm defined as, you know, some kind of a left-wing commie Marxist nut. I'm neither one. I never change. Now we got Obama in office and that another Clinton there in the administration, and suddenly we're right-wing nuts again.
Yeah.
But we haven't changed.
Well, I may have gotten a little more steely resolve against tyranny and more desire for liberty, but...
Yeah.
So I think we should take another break here real quick and come back. We got so much more to cover, and I want to make sure we get around to it. Hey, this is a track that's going to be you're going to be hearing on our bumper music.
Oh, yeah, Rumble. Gray Rumble. You know, that song was, there were all these public outcries, an attempt to make it illegal or something.
Really?
Well, actually to censor it because of that title of the song, Rumble, because it was thought that the song might contribute to juvenile delinquency.
It might incite someone?
Yes. It's inciting me tonight, though. I'm ready for a rumble here with the police state.
Take a drink.
Yes.
Excuse me. Well, somebody is a 9/11 truth activist sues Glenn Beck and Fox News for defamation.
Uh-huh.
This is over at georgewashington2.blogspot.com. Of course, this George Washington being the pseudonym of some 9/11 truther of much note, who over these last several years has written some of the most rational, easy to comprehend, take this to your friend and help them wake up to the parapolitical reality that is all around us. And George Washington writes, an East Coast 9/11 truth activist is preparing to file a defamation lawsuit against TV radio personality Glenn Beck, the producers of the Glenn Beck program. in the Fox News channel. Specifically, Greg Hoover will be suing the above-described defendants in federal court for Beck's having repeatedly broadcast statements characterizing those who question the government's official version of the events of 9/11 as, quote-unquote, anarchist terrorists and as persons denying the Holocaust. The complaint will note that on October 22, 2007, Beck suggested that those identifying themselves as associated with the 9/11 truth movement as are dangerous anarchists who deny the Holocaust and are the kind of group that Timothy McVeigh would come from. The suit will also note that during Beck's June 10th broadcast, Beck linked the murder of the Washington, D.C. Holocaust Museum guard with 9/11 truthers. So more power to Greg Hoover there.
Yeah, and that is really a terrible insult. I mean, he's talking about us. He's talking about you, listeners.
You can think for yourself.
You know, and being smeared as a Holocaust denier, you know, that's really ugly. You know.
How can you tell what's real anymore, Mac? Last week we didn't get around to covering this. I remember coming across an article over at Infowars.com, and I immediately was suspicious, but I mean, it seemed like a probably real article, and let me see if I can find that. It was satire. It turns out it was, in fact, satire, and thankfully, in questioning the author, I confirmed that, but the link over at InfoWars was to iStockAnalyst.com, Obama selling military secrets to China for debt forgiveness, question mark? And the article there said, I found this article on this blog, and I don't know whether to trust it, but here's what it's saying. And the link is to a blog called JumpingInPools.com, and the article was called B2 Plans for Sale, Richard Hogarty, Boston Reviewer, June 1st, 2009. It did not say satire, except that one of the categories it's tagged with is satire. But what's interesting is the author chose to write, to use the pseudonym of somebody who hasn't really published anything for the last 5-6 years or so, and that's this Richard Hogarty. And if you Google, if you Scroogle, if you use your favorite search engine, you'll find references to Richard A. Hogarty, 2002, in the political science section, writing on Massachusetts politics and public policy, studies in power, and yada, yada, yada. University of Massachusetts Amherst, University Press Book Jacket, Massachusetts Politics and Public Policy. So it's like the guy took on the nom de plume of somebody who, if just on a cursory search, might make this story sound a little more believable. But in fact, I contacted the author, and he confirmed, yeah, it's satire. And of course, as I said, it was labeled such in its categories. But again,
that doesn't exactly stand out like a red flag that says this is satire.
The article starts by saying, record deficits and a crashing economy appear to be taking a toll on the young Barack Obama administration. The administration has been talking about hiking income taxes and perhaps instituting a VAT tax. China is also concerned with the mounting deficits in the United States budget. That's been in the news. China is the single biggest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds and is one of Washington's biggest trading partners. The People's Republic has had a burgeoning economy but is increasingly wary of the falling U.S. dollar. That's all true.
Mm-hmm.
While the exact amount of Chinese ownership of U.S. treasuries is unknown, it is estimated to add up to over $1 trillion. If China were to call in U.S. guarantees on these bonds, economists fear it could lead to an economic collapse larger than the Great Depression. China has recently expanded its defense budget, ostensibly to keep up with its economic growth. It's reportedly working on its own version of a stealth bomber. The U.S. has the only functioning model, but is lagged by technological defects. On April 1st, there you go, President Obama spoke to Chinese Premier Hu Jintao during the G20 summit. During this meeting, Mr. Hu expressed interest in writing off some of the U.S. debt in exchange for military technology. The president has since offered the matter to Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Anyway, it's written, you know, not particularly tongue-in-cheek.
It's also not funny.
No, it's not. It's not. And considering the ongoing calls from mostly conservative right-wing parapolitical and conspiracy researchers that the Clinton administration was guilty of selling and trading various defense.
What do we know about secrets? The author of this thing?
The real author?
The real author.
He is one of several at this jumping in pools with no money and lots of time. What else is there to do?
Then
jump in pools.
Create hoaxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
just to see if something will take hold. And so, on the other hand, you know, you could have this sort of thing put out there intentionally with the understanding that a story like this that is ostensibly satire, but really to read it is plausible enough that, you know, the satire goes right over your head, that these stories get picked up and they get spread around, you know, and the original source. Very often people don't even know where the story got started. I've seen that happen a few times.
Well, it's on that theme that I'd like to proceed. What do you think of this? Fresno SWAT. File name, SWAT bust down.
Well, today we're serving a search warrant for a federal weapons violation. Suspect's apparently been selling automatic weapons. So it's going to be pretty quick. We may have runners. If they run, I'm not chasing them. And I don't want any of the rest of the team to chase them.
In other words, you'll shoot them. That's the implication right there. This all appears to be more or less a real SWAT reality TV drama. Something about it doesn't look quite right to me. But
it has a stagey feeling somewhat.
SWAT! Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out! Play clear! Clear!
Full boat.
It's a couple of old folks that they've just busted in on who have their hands up and clearly are not the gun dealers.
That was a little bit of a surprise. We came here looking for a subject that we had an arrest warrant for. And obviously we didn't find him. Excuse me just a second. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. All right. You're sure of that address? We've got a new address.
Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out!
Children screaming. Because it's a daycare.
Not cool.
Guys, I'm sorry.
Not cool. 511 North Seward. Spelled S-E-W-A-R-D. We'll be on our way there.
Please!
It's a bunch of girls having a party. A little dinner party. No, they're playing poker even. Yeah, we're going to sue you.
Apparently dispatch had some problems with information today. And
that's about all I can say.
Imagine if dispatch gave out as much bad information as search engines do.
Well, of course.
On average,
SWAT teams kick in.
People waste 24% of their time searching through unproductive links. Is this just simply a Google ad? What is this?
Yeah, where did this come from?
Well, I came across it through a variety of links. It appears that nobody has specifically ID'd it, to my knowledge. It's probably out there, and I just haven't found a link yet. But I found the link from Blue Collar Republican, and it's a post, Fresno SWAT in Action. And this is bluecollarrepublican.com. Appears to be a regular old real blog, not some ARG, as far as I know. Fresno SWAT in Action, and this is June 11, 2009. Back in 1980, while working in Yosemite National Park, I had to enlist the assistance of Fresno's PD's Special Investigations Division in meeting with a suspect in a Fresno home. They were a very professional bunch of guys, and they were brilliant from the time of the meeting all the way through the interrogation. By the time they were done, our suspect was telling us whatever we wanted to know, and we transported them back to Yosemite after the operation was complete. SID was a branch of the Fresno PD SWAT team, so when I came across this little video, I just had to post it. I guess even the best of us have our days, it says. Now, it's got a lot of link there. If you go to the link on the YouTube video, somebody suggests that it looks staged. It looks like some kind of, you know, hoax.
Yeah.
It does.
It's obvious, yeah.
And
these are actors.
But it specifically mentions Fresno SWAT. This guy is mentioning Fresno SWAT. And then there's this other website, kewego.com, Dispatch Misdirects 3 SWAT Raids. It's a link to this exact same file. And again, it's there's no real giveaway as to this being anything other than either some kind of weird marketing for Google search engines. I don't know. Or is it? I can't make heads or tails of it. Now, it seems pretty clear to me that it's obviously contrived. Now, what I found though is a flashback article here. Accusations of excessive force by Fresno County deputies. SWAT team searches for murder suspect. A family living on Big Sandy Rancheria near Aubrey is left picking up the pieces of their home on Wednesday after the Fresno County Sheriff's SWAT team served a search warrant. They accused deputies of using excessive force. Now, this is over at KSEE24.com and is, I believe, from 2006. So apparently the Fresno SWAT team, the real Fresno SWAT team, does have a history of and I tried to watch the video, but it's no longer available. At least it wasn't when I tried. So is this somehow masking?
Well, this happens a lot everywhere. You could just pick out any police
department, probably more than one,
and
Fresno
kicked in the wrong door
in the United States,
you know, and shot the dog and the people and everything. You know, it happens all the time.
Now, this also made me think of, I also, in Googling for this article and more about this Fresno SWAT team, I found a Washington Post, a flashback article to the Washington Post from many, many years ago, I think the 90s. Exploding number of SWAT teams sets off alarms. Critics see growing role of heavily armed police units as militarization of law enforcement. This is from June 17th, 1997. William Booth, 700 plus words.
Now it's in Washington Post, and it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. Right?
And it mentions the SWAT team in Fresno mirrors a growing trend in U.S. law enforcement. The rise in the number of departments now boasts a SWAT team. So I just found that really interesting.
Well, it's an odd film because it comes on like some advertisement for a search engine, Google. But
only at the very end, though.
But I never heard a
there's no mention of a
product.
No.
In this advertisement. And the only places that this has appeared have been
that
these blogs where it was posted apparently in all seriousness.
Yeah. Now, I really, if any of our listeners out there has, and it's probably something glaring that I missed, but I did not find anything, and that's not to say that I, you know, am the best internet searcher out there, but hey, I tried, and I couldn't find any evidence of that being fake. Now, on the other hand, our good friend Jeremy Wells told me about, hey, did you hear about these protesters of Electronic Arts' new game about hell called Dante's Inferno? No, I hadn't. What are you talking about? Check this out. Video games with protesters? Didn't we talk about that last episode? the game Dante's Inferno from the video game company Electronic Arts. Apparently, at the big E3 gaming conference, there was a bunch of, well, allegedly, protesters.
Hell no! We won't go! Heck no! We won't go! Dante's Inferno!
fucking bullcrap.
Hello? I'd like to say that Electronic Arts some sort of anti-crash for trying to make this game Dante's Inferno.
And which game?
I don't know. I don't know if that's well, Dante's Inferno, particularly this is game that they're we've heard that they are promoting inside, and we want to say that this game, you know, we hope that it never comes to market. Let's just be honest with that. We hope that it never comes. That we hope this game never comes out. We hope that you know, people can never go to the store and buy this game because, you know, in hell is not some sort of game that you can just go to and.
Have you made any games in the past that you guys are angry about?
You know, I can't say that. I can't say. Honestly, I can't say that.
You can't say it.
I've
Why?
Seen Doom. I've seen,
are you a paid
Doom,
employee,
Doom
perhaps?
And Diablo. And, you know, those games, sort of games I'm not into.
Okay.
Well, I mean, those aren't electronic.
Great publicity for the game.
So I went to the link that my friend sent me, and I immediately was suspicious, and for,
yeah,
because it was for Electronic Arts video game, and I know that they've been... They've done a lot of viral, very creative viral and stealth marketing.
Yeah.
And we were just talking last week about, you know, the Stop the TARP ARG, where they had fake protests at the South by Southwest gaming panel discussion. And sure enough, a little scroogling, a little ixquicking turned up that, in fact, this Dante's Inferno protest was paid for by EA, Electronic Arts. They hired some gaming, rather they hired some advertising firm, who took care of this, and who paid these 20 people to act as protesters, and they even set up this other website for these protesters, wearesaved.org, and check out.
Sounds like this could get out of hand.
We've seen the trailer. We've seen them put a crucifix brutally through somebody's head, and that's not all right. That's not all right by us.
It's not right, but what happened.
So the sound in the background you're hearing are from wearesaved.org.
wearesavegroup.org. Or the present even, but about eternal, the eternal.
Okay. Let us ask you this. Is a game really worth the price of eternal damnation? So this is the fake site. It looks so cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
It looks
like the kind of site you would see for, you know, I've seen sites like this.
You know, across,
but they weren't advertising, you know, a product.
Right. This all, you know, it's all geared. This is all designed to make people, you know, get their attention and go, oh, cool, a game I want to play.
Uh huh.
So apparently, several mainstream news sources, quote unquote, fell for this. It appears that at least a blogger at the LA Times blog page, and I don't know if it appeared in print, fell for this, as did the San Jose Mercury News. Thankfully, they each printed updates on their webpage saying, oh, it appears that this was in fact paid for.
You know, this is starting to give me ideas. I'm thinking maybe, you know, we organize a protest for PSYOP Radio. How would you feel about a gang of protesters?
Right outside,
you know, the studio here. you know, headlines.
So, all of this kind of makes me wonder, and we've covered this issue before about propaganda, psyops, and hoax news stories, and this Slate magazine article by Sharon Weinberger, who I believe I was talking about last week and week before about her articles on mind control research in the mainstream press. She wrote for Slate magazine back a few years ago an article, PSYOPs Propaganda Goes Mainstream, where she talks about this company that basically, you know, has scenarios where they could try to contain an unruly population through disinformation. You know,
a campaign of mass deception.
Now, the reason I bring this up, besides what we've just seen, is because there was two news articles in the news recently that really just made me go, you are kidding me. They're just saying this out now. Okay. One was from space.com. Incoming space rocks now classified. Now, this also interests me because of the supposed quote of Wernher von Braun about how they would implement world control by an escalation of outside threats like terrorism, rogue nations with nuclear weapons, meteors, and an alien invasion threat.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have military hush-up, incoming space rocks now classified by Leonard David over at space.com. He's their Space Insider columnist. For 15 years, scientists have benefited from data gleaned by U.S. classified satellites of natural fireball events in Earth's atmosphere. But no longer. A recent U.S. military policy decision now explicitly states that observations by hush-hush government spacecraft of incoming bolides and fireballs are classified secret and are not to be released, Space.com has learned. The satellite's main objectives include detecting nuclear bomb tests and their characterizations of asteroids and lesser meteoroids as they crash through the atmosphere has been a byproduct data bonanza for scientists. The upshot, space rocks that explode in the atmosphere are now classified. Quote, "It's baffling to us why this would suddenly change," said one scientist familiar with the work. "It's unfortunate because there was this great synergy, a very good cooperative arrangement. Systems were put into dual-use mode where a lot of science was getting done that couldn't be done any other way. It's a regrettable change in policy." Scientists say not only will research into the threat from space be hampered, but public understanding of sometimes dramatic sky explosions will be diminished, perhaps leading to hype and fear of the unknown.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's more to this article, of course, but wasn't it earlier this year, late last year, we were covering the meteor that was filmed by an Austin film crew breaking up and seen over several states here in the United States?
And that happened after a satellite collision.
Oh, yeah.
And there was speculation at the time, because we don't actually see that sort of thing every day. Fireballs just pouring out of the sky. The speculation was that it might have something to do with the space. Over the following days, remember, there were all these stories about metal objects crashing through people's roofs.
Right. The pieces
ripped
off of tree shredders, those...
Wood chippers. It was like suddenly all of the machines in the nation, it was like a copycat effect or something, and they all started
doing it. They're all Chinese manufacturers set to go off at the same time.
And you notice that the farther away in time we get from that satellite collision, the less we hear about wood chippers and what have you firing off pieces of metal with such force that they can crash through two or three floors of a building.
Yeah, and was like way too hot to pick up.
In other words, things have gotten back to normal where that doesn't happen.
So, I didn't realize this had a video. The other article that caught my attention in relationship to this issue of our right to know, our right to be informed citizens about our world. Now, granted here, there's another defense national security spin here, but here's the headline. Coal ash spills, too dangerous to reveal to public, says DHS. Now, the first thing I thought was, like, the Salon article, like, okay, some radioactive spill has happened at a nuclear plant or a coal plant, and, you know, was it 3 months ago, 6 months ago, there was that massive coal ash spill that, like, the mud flood uprooted homes, and people were narrowly escaping from their sleeping postures in their bedrooms when... A miles wide slew of coal runoff broke out of a reservoir and demolished homes. Did you remember who saying anything about that?
God, I don't know how I could forget, but apparently
okay,
I don't remember.
It may have gone up and sunk like a stone.
So many stories of disaster.
This is what this is about. They're basically saying that, well, you know, the places where that's likely to occur, you're not
going
to
tell you
know.
About it. Wow.
Just how bad has the coal ash situation gotten in the United States? So bad that the Department of Homeland Security has told Senator Barbara Boxer that her committee can't publicly disclose the location of coal ash dumps across the country.
Now, how does this increase Homeland Security?
The pollution is so toxic, so dangerous, that an enemy of the United States, or a storm, oh shit, or some other disrupting event, did I just pass gas? Could easily cause them to spill out and lay waste to an area nearby. to any area nearby. There are 44 sites deemed by the Environmental Protection Agency to be high hazard, but Boxer said she isn't allowed to talk about them other than to senators in the states affected. Quote, "There is a huge muzzle on me and my staff," she said. Quote, "Homeland Security and the Army Corps of Engineers have decided in the interests of national security they can't make these sites known," she said. "There are several hundred coal ash sites, coal ash piles across the nation," she said, "all of them unregulated. If these coal ash piles were to fail, they'd pose a threat to the people nearby," she said. While keeping it from the public, DHS is alerting first responders as to the location of the piles.
Well, the secret will get out.
Well, you know
but,
what?
You know, I want to know.
If I can't buy a home, if I'm buying a home, I have a right to know that I know I have a right to know because I have to pay more mortgage and insurance on flood insurance if it's known to be in a floodplain. That's what this is. It's a floodplain from a coal runoff.
And I would think that any enemy that really has the capability of
to figure this out in New York.
Yeah, that has the capability of staging an attack like this on the coal ash dumps of the nation.
Maybe
you know,
we shouldn't know about this.
That they would find out, you know, much easier than we could and already know if such enemies even exist.
If they even exist.
And you see, this is the Department of Homeland Security, which was created in the aftermath of 9/11, and we know who the real terrorists are there. Well, the Department of Homeland Security is the terrorists.
Homeland and Security.
Yeah. They provide cover for the real terrorists.
Give me my futility.
Yeah.
Over at greenbiz.com, radioactive metals found in recliners, handbags due to recycling contamination. Now, maybe, clamp down. Wait, no, you shouldn't know this. Terrorists could gather together these radioactive products and use them as weapons of mass destruction.
I really got to know because I was planning on going home tonight and sitting in my recliner.
Oh, you're soaking in it. Oakland, California. Cheese graters, handbags, fencing, and recliners are just some of the thousands of consumer products that have been manufactured with radioactive metals, according to U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission records. Oh, my God. A Scripps Howard News Service investigation link, scrippsnews.com, looked at NRC records and the current state of reporting on radioactive materials, turning up numerous flaws in the U.S.'s current system and finding a wide range of cases in which radioactive materials and products were brought to the U.S. NRC records show 18,740 documented cases involving radioactive materials in consumer products, in metal intended for consumer products, or other public exposure to radioactive material. The U.S. Government Accountability Office estimates there are some 500,000 unaccounted for radioactively contaminated metal objects in the U.S., and the NRC estimates that figure is around 20 million pounds of contaminated waste.
No wonder the cancer rate is so high.
Jeez, blow my...
Oh, boy.
Okay, here's some
your
examples.
Recliner could be killing you.
Here's some examples. A China-made kitchen grater found in a Flint, Michigan scrap plant that was laced with the isotope cobalt-60, giving off the equivalent of a chest x-ray over 36
Ooh.
Hours of use. Okay, so if you were working there for 36 hours, it was like, that's awful.
Yeah.
A 430,000-pound shipment of metal tainted with cobalt-60 that came from Brazil in 1998 and was used to make brackets for 1,000 Lazy Boy recliners, giving off a chest x-ray's worth of radiation every 1,000 hours.
Oh, no.
How many hundreds well,
thank God I don't have a Lazy
of
Boy.
Hours you lay in a Lazy Boy. Women's
Ooh.
Handbags, sets of
no.
buttons for Otis elevators. Chain link fencing from India in 1991.
Next thing we'll hear, it's in little children's ice cream, Mandrake.
Sucking off their precious.
I mean, here's something that seriously is a danger, you know, and we're not being told about it. And for that matter, I mean, if they're going to, you know, try to keep things like this, you know, on the back pages of the news at best. You know, what about all the other things?
I do not know, Mac.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. We all going to die.
Why don't we take another break here? that seems like a good thing to do if I can only get get to the emergency exit in time. Where's the alarm bell sounding? I'm trying to make it happen. I swear, any second now. We'll be right back, folks.
The operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine won't be prevented from working at all.
Folks, thanks for joining us. This is PSYOP Radio, and that was Mario Savio from 1964 saying it like it is, man. Would you ever imagine that we'd be in this crazy reality tunnel?
No, I don't suppose I would. And it feels weird in here too. Ooh.
I think those mushrooms are kicking it. Wait, no, just kidding. That's a joke, folks. Surely nothing human could. We covered last week East Texas cops setting a bad example.
Oh, and there's been another one.
This next
like
report
it.
Takes us back to the heart of Texas, where Gary Tuchman has found another county awash in both cash and allegations of corruption. The money, more than $1 million last year, was seized from drivers who were pulled over by cops.
This guy.
There are allegations that some of those drivers were innocent. So what's happening to all that money? Well, that's why so many people are steamed. Gary Tuchman tonight is keeping them on.
The dusty roads here in Texas Hill Country have been a gold mine for police and prosecutors. But some defense attorneys call it the best little ripoff in Texas.
It makes Texans look like buffoons. And it makes it look like all of our judges and police officers are crooks down here.
In Texas and other states, cops can pull over drivers suspected of serious crimes, and they can actually seize their cash and valuables. Four times the former DA here spent tens of thousands of it for all expense paid trips to Hawaii for himself, some of his staff, and spouses.
Do you think it was okay to spend that money to go to Hawaii?
Absolutely.
Why do you think that?
Well, it's part of the United States. Last time I checked, I mean, we have...
This is Anomaly Radio.
The newcomer goes to the stairs and is attacked. The previous newcomer takes part in the punishment with enthusiasm. Likewise, replace a third original monkey with a new one, then a fourth, then a fifth. Every time the newest monkey takes to the stairs, he's attacked. Most of the monkeys that are beating him have no idea why they were not permitted to climb the stairs or why they are participating in the beating of the newest monkey. After replacing all the original monkeys, none of the remaining monkeys have ever been sprayed with cold water. Nevertheless, no monkey ever again approaches the stairs to try for the banana. Why not? Because as far as they know, that's the way it's always been done around here. And that is how government policy is maintained.
That is a very effective video.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's making the rounds now. I think that that video I think I found off of probably 911blogger.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're probably coming towards the end of the show here, but there's still so much more news that we haven't covered.
So much.
Not sure if there's any other news that you wanted to mention. Oh, I noticed that zombie banks are in the news again. of course, we're commenting on the weird prank where somebody broke into all those transportation flashing signs and reprogrammed it to say, zombies run. And that seemed to precede a wave of news articles about zombie banks.
And now they're back.
The internationalforecaster.com. This is that guy that I think Alex Jones interviews on a regular basis. Bob Chapman, yeah. Financial bailout plans keep zombie banks alive. 37th bank failure this week, Madoff fraud tally being calculated, a recession continues to deepen, financial zombies kept alive after almost destroying our financial system. On Friday, we had the latest edition of the FDIC Friday Night Financial Follies as regulators on Friday shut down Bank of Lincolnwood, a small bank in Illinois, marking the 37th failure this year of a federally insured bank. More are expected to succumb amid the pressures of the weak economy and mounting loan defaults. This is in the police state section. This is in the globalism via Big Brother health and climate enforcers. This news out of Australia, Australian police forced to become carbon cops. And I think they're not really happy about it. There's also an article out of Australia in our police state links where a Aboriginal elder who was in police custody died from exposure. He was cooked alive in the van that he was being transported in.
That's awful.
And he suffered greater than third-degree burns on his body. This article from Herald and Weekly Times, Australian police forced to become carbon cops. The Herald Sun can reveal Australian federal police agents will have to prosecute a new range of climate offenses, but they are yet to be offered extra resources, stretching the thin blue line to breaking point. Quote, the government is effectively saying to us, ignore other types of crimes. Australian Federal Police Association Chief Jim Tor said, the group had been trying for months without success to issue to discuss the issue with climate change minister Penny Wong, he said. Interpol has warned the carbon market will be irresistible to criminal gangs because of the vast amounts of cash to be made. Possible routes include underreporting of carbon emissions by firms and bogus carbon offset schemes. Outlawing anything creates outlaws and a criminal underworld.
That's the way it seems to work.
Was there any other articles? I know we've got the Obama warns very much in the way that Bush did, not to question the official story of 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
It just seems like deja vu.
Yeah.
I'm aware that there's still some who would question or even justify the offense of 9/11.
No.
But let us be clear. Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 people on that day. The victims were innocent men, women, and children from America and many other nations who had done nothing to harm anybody. And yet Al-Qaeda chose to ruthlessly murder these people, claimed credit for the attack, and even now states their determination to kill on a massive scale. They have affiliates in many countries and are trying to expand their reach. These are not opinions to be debated. These are facts.
You know, the only ones I see in killing on a massive scale is the U.S.
Yeah, we're the ones creating more terrorists.
Outrageous conspiracy theories.
There's the old footage.
Concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
In other words, don't think for yourself.
How dare you?
The Clinton quote, yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, I think it's about time to wrap things up. I know there's never enough time to cover all the things that we want to on the show, but we've certainly covered a lot. Thanks for tuning in.
Yes, it's been a good show.
It's been PSYOP Radio. Not live this time.
No, we did a pretty good show here, not live, and we didn't break nothing. So that's my definition of a good show.
Mac, I think I broke something. I'll tell you in a minute.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Good night.
Good night.